Hi everyone, Alistair Willis here, music director of your South Bend Symphony. Welcome to our third Aha with Alistair podcast of the season, in which we'll explore the musical heroes on our upcoming Jack M. Champagne Masterworks. Our opening piece is about a local hero called Rosemary Sanders. Rosemary was the first Black American member of our South Bend Symphony when she joined in 1940. Although accepted into the orchestra, her name wasn't printed in programs, she was seated at the back of the second violins, and not included in any formal orchestra photographs. These choices reflected the realities of segregation in South Bend at the time, inclusion without visibility. The piece is called Hidden, composed by Jessica Carter, who's also from South Bend. The South Bend Symphony and I are thrilled to be giving the world premiere of Hidden on February the 28th. Hidden is a reflective musical portrait of Rosemary's life. I love how it begins with a solo violin playing from the back of the second violin section where she would have played from. This theme represents Rosemary herself. It guides the music forward, transforming the music and the orchestra as it takes on different meanings and functions, sometimes solemn, sometimes intense, sometimes fragile, sometimes triumphant. At the end, the piece comes full circle with a solo violin, which, as Jessica says, quote, releases the music into the air, a quiet act of remembrance, and a voice no longer held back. Jessica also says, Hidden exists as an act of acknowledgement, not to retroactively correct history, but to insist on presence now. Rosemary Sanders died on January the 14th, 2017, at the age of 95. Her contribution to our South Bend Symphony Orchestra remained largely hidden during her lifetime. And the piece, Hidden, is a response to that absence. Looking ahead, Hidden will be used to underscore and complement the upcoming documentary about Rosemary Sanders called Invisible Player, which is being produced by another South Bend hero, Dr. Marvin Curtis. No coincidence that we'll follow Jessica Carter's piece with a violin concerto, one of the most beloved in the repertoire. I've always thought that concerto soloists are akin to heroes. It takes something special to play a solo part in front of the orchestra. And performing Max Brooks' violin concerto in G minor for us will be another South Bend Symphony hero, our concertmaster, Jameson Cooper, who joins me in the studio now. Jamie, welcome.
Thank you. Hi.
We are so glad to have you. Before we get to the music, Jamie, tell us a bit about yourself, where you're from, and how you ended up in South Bend.
Yeah, well, it's a long, convoluted story, which probably people don't want to hear all of, but I'll give you the abbreviated version. I grew up in Sheffield, England, and that's in the north of England, and I started playing the violin when I was 6 years old. There was a local middle school teacher, the music teacher, who also taught the violin. That's how it got started, the violin. And I stayed with her until I was about 12, I think. One of the main things that happened to me is that I joined the Sheffield Youth Orchestra around that time. And so I did that for a couple of years. And then they had an annual seating audition. I impressed the conductor and the director of the thing to the point where they said, oh, you should audition for the National Youth Orchestra.
Ooh.
But anyway, I did try, and I was lucky to get in. And so I was 13 when I joined the National Youth Orchestra. And that was such a big deal for me. Mm. It was so exciting to be in with all those kids, and we got to do some incredible music. I got to work with Pierre Boulez and Jesse Norman. Anyway, that was just an amazing experience for me, and that was the thing that sort of cemented it for me. It was like, yeah, this is what I want to do. I want to play the violin. And then I went to college in Manchester, the Royal Northern College of Music. After I graduated from there, I went to the Aspen Music Festival in Colorado. Uh-huh.
What year were you there?
That was 1995.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You beat me there by 4 years.
Ah, right. Okay. The main reason I went there is because Itzhak Perlman was my hero.
Wow.
There's a famous documentary made by Christopher Newpin, who did a lot of musician films in the 70s, and he did one on Itzhak Perlman. And there's a bit of him there when he's in Aspen and he's talking about his teaching and everything. And Dorothy DeLay, his teacher, was there. Yeah. So, you know, I wanted to be like Itzhak Perlman, so I thought I should go to Aspen. So so I went there, and then that led me to Ohio, Kent State University. But I was studying with some teachers at Oberlin College. The graduate program there that I was in was the graduate string quartet program. So that's where my quartet, the Euclid Quartet, started.
Oh, wow.
And
Ohio.
Yeah, Kent State University, Ohio. And so we did that for, we stayed in school for as long as we could. And then we got our first quartet job in Sioux City, Iowa. And then the job at IUSB opened up. And so we moved here in 2007. So
almost
I've been here
years.
Almost 20 years now.
Wow,
yeah.
That's extraordinary.
So during that time, since moving to South Bend, you know, I've played with the symphony just on and off here and there. And then I think it was 2023 when I did the audition for the concertmaster mm-hmm. spot. So now I'm officially part of the team. So yeah. So
well,
here I am.
That's a wonderful story. Of course, the audition was very fair and competitive and national, etc. We don't want anyone to think that, you know, the British are trying to take over here.
Yeah.
Of course, this is very clear to establish. Well, as everyone knows, we not only invite world names like Yo-Yo Ma to perform with us, we love to feature the extraordinary talent right here in South Bend, which includes our own musicians. As you know, recently, Aviva and Nick, our principal second violinist and principal violist, were featured in Mozart's Sinfonia Concertante. Janet Engel, our principal oboist, was featured in a Mosaic concert just last month. So it's only natural that our concertmaster has his moment, and this is it. So, Jamie, when we invited you to choose a concerto to play, I recall pretty much without hesitation you said, Brooks G minor concerto. Why?
Well, it's a very much loved concerto. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, it's definitely one of the most popular ones. But I don't think it's been played here for quite a long time. So, you know, I was thinking back. I mean, when you were auditioning for the conductor role, you did Mendelssohn, I remember.
That's right, yeah, we did Mendelssohn.
Mm-hmm. And we did Tchaikovsky last year.
Right.
And I remember Barber Concerto. And so, yep. You know, a lot of the most famous ones have been done.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
But but Brooke, I don't remember it being done. I don't remember seeing it on the program.
Well, we love variety, so thank you.
So yeah, I think it's
It's time.
Yeah, it's time. And it's a piece that I've never done myself. I've never performed it, but I've taught it a lot. I have a lot of students that I run through it. It's a great pedagogical piece. So
yes.
So I'm supposed to know what I'm doing with it, apparently. So we will see whether I actually do, if I practice what I preach.
Well, so, I mean, it's like pieces, when I conduct a piece for the first time, I've probably studied it for decades, and it already is part of me, like this piece is of you. What's so special about the Brook to you? Is there any particular thing or moment or generality?
Well, I think the opening is really quite surprising. You know, there's no long introduction like you have, say, in the Beethoven or the Brahms concerto. It's just this little nugget in the winds, and then it starts with just this very blank open G. There's not a beauty in that compared to, say, the Tchaikovsky, which is a very beautiful opening. It's just a rather stark kind of opening to the piece, and it really is quite moody, I find, the beginning of the piece. You know, it's quite dark, and then the overall trajectory of the piece is from from that kind of grumbly beginning into a very joyous, exciting finish, passing through a very romantic, beautiful slow movement. So I think it's quite a surprising opening, and I think, you know, a bold move on his part. I think only outdone by Berg in the where he uses all four open strings.
Right.
But I think that's pretty interesting how he did it, and it's also so German, you know, all the gestures. Right. It's very kind of butch in the first movement, and then very romantic and sweeping in a second. I think it really is a piece that has tremendous variety and a really satisfying emotional trajectory as it goes through. You know,
I couldn't agree more. I absolutely love it. Apparently, millions of Brits also loved it, because for 5 years between 1996 and 2000, Classic FM listeners, that's the one of the top radio stations in England, they voted it as number one in the Classic FM Hall of Fame. Wow. I mean, that's just extraordinary. And there's so much to it. Brooke, I think I read, had lots of violinists come to him wanting to play that for him. And he would say, no, I've written other pieces too. Why don't you play those too? But this was his number one best and most famous composition. Can you tell us a little bit about the person who premiered it, Joachim?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know much about Joachim's life, but I know he was a very important figure as somebody who consulted with Brahms as well on his violin concerto. He has his own violin concerto too. I've actually never heard it. There's a Joachim violin concerto. But he was just a really the go-to guy for the German composers to check in with their, how's my violin concerto look? So I think that there are recordings of him playing. He was an old man at the time, but I'm pretty sure there are some old recordings of him. So,
what do you hope our audience in South Bend will take away from our performance?
Well, I hope they enjoy the romance of the piece and the excitement of it. It's a very popular piece of music that I think a lot of people recognize the tunes. But I hope that we'll be introducing some people to it for the first time as well, and they will grow to love it as well. So it's hard to not like the Brooke Concerto. Mm. I think, you know, most people are going to get away from it having enjoyed the piece. So.
Oh. I totally agree. So we look forward to having you playing standing about 2 yards from where you normally sit. So
right,
it won't be too much of a geographical distance from you.
If I get tired, I'll just go sit back down.
We can't wait to perform the Brooke G minor violin concerto with you. Jamie, thanks for chatting.
Great pleasure. Thank you.
Our second half features the symphony that changed history. The Eroica Symphony No. 3 by Ludwig van Beethoven. By the beginning of the 19th century, symphonies were generally polite affairs, conformed to tradition, well-structured, often predictable. Beethoven threw this notion out of the window. His Third Symphony is bursting with new ideas, new energy, including a shifting idea of heroism, from a specific political figure to a more abstract artistic representation of heroic struggle. Beethoven, as we know, greatly admired Napoleon Bonaparte as a champion of French revolutionary ideals, a hero of the people, and intended to dedicate his Third Symphony to him. However, when he heard in 1804 that Napoleon had declared himself emperor, a disgusted Beethoven tore up the title page, and in a letter he wrote, "So he is no more than a common mortal. Now, too, he will tread underfoot all the rights of man, indulge only his ambition. Now he will think himself superior to all men and become a tyrant." Beethoven went on to write, "It is a pity that I do not understand the art of war as well as I do the art of music. Then I would conquer him." So Beethoven renamed it Heroic Symphony, composed to celebrate the memory of a great man. The natural assumption is that the great man is Napoleon. However, during the course of the symphony, how Beethoven stretches the boundaries of form, length, harmony, takes us emotionally from the lowest depths to the highest highs, and even introduces a second hero into the mix, Prometheus, it feels to me as if it's Beethoven who's representing the heroic struggle and referring to himself as the great man. Let's not forget that it was only a few years earlier, around 1800, Beethoven was starting to go deaf. As he was composing the Eroica, he revealed his despair and even contemplation of suicide in a letter to his brothers, Karl and Johann, known as the Heiligenstadt Testament. This letter also reveals his turning point where he resolved to overcome his suffering, continue composing, and explore a new heroic phase in his music, the immediate outcome of which was his Symphony No. 3. The beginning of the symphony immediately grabs our attention. There's no slow introduction, just two chords which to me say, hey, listen, and immediately the first melody, not in the violins, but in the cellos. There are three horns, not the usual two. We hear crashing dissonant chords. He expands sonata form so much that the length of the first movement alone is longer than many complete symphonies by Haydn and Mozart. In the second movement, he creates a funeral march of such epic proportions, nothing had been heard like it before. It also contains one of the first times in a symphony that the cellos and the basses are independent of each other. We can hear this split at the very beginning of the movement. The low, grumbling upbeats are played only by the basses. And one of my favorite, extraordinarily original moments is near the end of this movement, where the timpani is used melodically. Beethoven has the timpani play the final note of this phrase. It's a very quiet last note and a simply astonishing moment. The third movement is not the usual minuet and trio, it's a scherzo. Scherzo literally means joke, and these were quicker, more fun than minuets and offered more freedom to experiment. The three horns play a prominent role in the trio, the middle section. Or another way of putting it is, there's a trio of horns in the trio of the third movement of his third symphony. Oh, I love that. Fourth movements tended to be short and breezy, often in rondo form. However, Beethoven chooses a form called theme and variations, and the 10 variations plus coda give him ample space to show off all his skills. He includes another hero reference, that of Prometheus, the titan in Greek mythology known for his immense intelligence, the champion of humanity who stole fire from Zeus to enable civilization. And for this, Beethoven steals his own music from the ballet he had composed about Prometheus in 1801. Here's the ballet music. Thank you. now from the Third Symphony. Same music, but now with a fuller orchestration. Perhaps Beethoven felt some connection with Prometheus, who took risks, resisted, and suffered in order to help humanity. His heroic music certainly provides a fitting conclusion to the symphony. Beethoven ultimately sweeps us up as listeners with resolve, self-belief in humanity, and the overwhelming power of the human spirit. Beethoven's Third changed history, paved the way for future composers like Wagner, Mahler, Bruckner. Its influence is still revered and celebrated today. Just 10 years ago, BBC Music Magazine surveyed 151 of the world's top conductors, and Eroica was named as the greatest symphony of all time. The South Bend Symphony and I can't wait to play it for you on February the 28th at the Morris Performing Arts Centre. Thank you for listening to Aha with Alastair on WVPE.org.